Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction industry, including haunted houses, haunted hayrides, haunted trails, home haunts, main thing I forgot. Haunty stuff. It's a haunty stuff podcast. And so how are you doing this week, Crystal? We are back.
We are still going.
We're somehow still doing this. Week three, I know.
I know.
Already outlived my expectations.
Mind you, honestly.
Yes. Well, we actually have a very, very busy, dense show this week.
We do. It's, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff to cover.
Yeah, when we originally sat down and started working on this show, it was going to be the basics of haunt construction and design.
Yeah.
And then we wrote the show notes out and realized that there's just way too damn much to fit into an hour, so we're realistically probably going to do just construction. If we have time left over, we may step a little bit into design, but you know.
Yeah. And one kind of, you know, interjects with the other and works with the other, so there's going to be a little bit of overlap.
Yeah, and like I said in the previous episode about haunt safety, we're going to be going through this super quickly.
Right.
This is going to be fast. This is not going to be in-depth. There's like 8 topics in this, my list, that I think might be capable of a show on its own. I think we could do a whole show on panels.
We could.
And that would be...
I had talked about that.
That would be a show that absolutely no one other than haunters would give a damn about, I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that would be a very... It'd be interesting as hell to me, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, and probably, like, you know, the 15 other people that give that much of a damn about panels. But regardless, so yeah, there's a lot of topics in here we're going to go back into later. I am positive of that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so it's be prepared. This is going to be a brief overview of this subject.
Right.
All right, so... Shall we dive into haunt construction?
Let's dive.
Well, okay. Before we begin, we got a disclaimer of sorts. Not all haunts are built the way we're about to describe.
Right. Because everybody does it a little bit different.
Everyone does it different, A. But also the method we're talking about, even though it's what's been done at all the haunts we've been involved in capacity, it's more aimed at haunts that do a lot of tear down and rearrange.
Right.
And more of a temporary structure.
Yes. Yes. Not build basically a house.
Yeah. There are haunts in like the 13th Gate and so forth here in Baton Rouge. The major haunts that just basically do standard construction. They don't use this particular method.
Right.
And that's perfectly fine if money, space, and everything aligns to allow you to do it.
Right.
So if everything aligns, by all means, use whatever method suits you. This is just the one we're familiar with and we know is widely used, I would say, by a majority of haunts.
A pretty wide majority. Yeah, and I'm not so sure about that, you know, comment that big haunts don't use this method. Just because...
Oh, some do. Some do use
it. Yeah.
No, it's just some that have a more permanent location.
So what is it? Okay, we've been talking about it.
We've been beating around the bush for long enough, yeah. Well, to talk about basic haunt construction, we have to start with, like, the atom.
Yes.
The most basic unit, if you will, and that is the panel.
Okay. Well, to talk about the type of construction we're dealing with, though, the temporary structure, it's one that can be taken down and moving around easily.
And that's why panels are so useful.
Right.
Now, what is a panel is the next question anyone that doesn't know what a panel is will be asking.
Yes.
It is basically, typically, it is a 4-foot by 8-foot
sheet
of plywood. Okay, actually, it's chipboard. I know some of my friends are going to yell at me if I call it plywood.
It's chipboard, it's plywood, it's some type of wood.
Yeah, some type of flat wood with a frame of lumber behind it.
Yes.
Now, how exactly do you build a panel? Everyone does it different. It's like a flipping fingerprint.
Yeah.
If you go on the internet And obviously, if you're listening to us, you're on the internet, at least some.
They are?
It's kind of a requirement to listen to a podcast here.
Wow.
But if you go on the internet and you pull up videos about how to build panels, you will find everybody, the basic premise is the same, 4 foot by 8 foot.
Right.
And that's super convenient because that's the size a sheet of plywood comes in.
Right.
You don't have to do any weird mill or jigsaw cut. You don't have to do any wonky, table saws.
Unless you're in a garage like us that has a door that opens and you have to cut some of them down to
6 feet or 7 feet to have clearance for the door. But yeah, but normally it's 8 feet and that's the exact same size. That's what you get the plywood in. Therefore, it reduces your number of wonky cuts.
Yeah.
But as far as what's behind it, what makes the frame, everybody's different. And that's something I've just learned over time.
Yeah, and it's, some people use 1x2s or 2x2s to do the backs of their frames. I personally don't see how that would stand up as well as 2x4s, which is what we use. And then, some people lay the pieces flat against the back of the panel to make their frame, and others don't. They use them, to where they can actually affix things to them on the backside.
The basic decision you have to make with a panel is how thick do you want it? Now, you're going to assume you're going to have either a quarter inch or a half inch thick sheet of wood on the front. Probably a quarter inch, probably thinner the better here. So assume if you have a double-sided panel, in most cases.
Okay, well, the only reason that
it's because of impact walls.
Impact walls, and, there is this thing called Masonite, which we did use. Hey, it was better than the plastic from the first year, which everybody told us to use the first year, okay?
Yeah, anyone.
Because just don't use tarp. If you plan on actually scaring people, don't use tarp.
Especially if you plan on reusing any damn thing you do.
Yes, that too. But I mean, people who are really scared will go through a tarp wall.
They will not go through plywood. It turns out they've tried repeatedly in our haunt, and they have failed every time.
Yes,
thankfully they've gone through a 2x4 once.
Yeah,
but not through our plywood yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So, Masonite is a very thin sheet of wood that you can get. It's the problem with it is that it's too thin.
It's too thin, and oftentimes it's actually more expensive than plywood, depending upon where you're buying it from, because it's meant for more finishing application, like for cabinetry and so forth, than it really is for construction. But yeah, we've used it before, because I remember when we first started, we were in a New Orleans that was still reconstructing.
Right.
Plywood was a scarcity.
Well, not only that, but the price of plywood
was through the roof when you found it.
Yeah, it was really expensive. And I had used Masonite in art school.
For paintings, yeah.
For paintings,
yeah. As a canvas, basically.
So I knew that it could be painted on and, hold the paint well.
It was available, and, that's the first rule. Use what you've got available.
Yeah.
So in that regard, yes, they were the best panels we ever made. We knew what was available.
For that year.
And they functioned. They survived. I think we finally have replaced all the Masonite.
All but one.
We still have one.
One.
Okay, it's going next year. I'm calling out. I don't know where it is, but I'm calling
it
out.
It's at the very front. Nobody ever actually sees it.
I'm calling it out. It's going away next year.
Yeah.
There's no way around it now, So the real decision is how thick do you want your panels?
Right.
Because if you do it the way we do it, with the 2x4s that are laying on there, so that you have maximum thickness, basically.
Right.
Where you're screwing into the side of the 2x4, you're going to have a panel that is about 4 inches thick. Because you got 3.5 inches for the mill 2x4 plus quarter inch either side, if it's a double-sided panel, for the actual face, or the skin, as we like to call it.
Right. I think that's just a standard term.
It is. The haunt industry is a little more, I don't know, I've heard other haunters use it. I don't know if it's a standard industry term. We call it the skin. And that's because we're morbid people, and we like to think of everything. It's great to say we're taking off the skin.
Yes. Yeah, so basically what you get is a thick box that you can put a skin on both sides.
Yes.
So you have a double-sided wall now, which makes it very nice for creating rooms.
Yeah.
It does interfere a little bit with the square footage, which is why a lot of people
build
do it the other way.
Mm-hmm.
which is to lay it flat, which I guess you could still do the double-sided.
You can do double-sided panels that way, but the issue you run into when you make them that thin is our panels and panels like ours are almost completely freestanding.
Yeah.
If I put one of our panels up in a room and just walked away, as long as it was a level floor, it's not going to come tumbling down.
Yeah. Well, and especially whenever you make an L piece.
Yeah.
You know, those stand by themselves.
They'll stand forever. Well, the thinner panels need more structural support. They need something else.
Yeah, you can't, like, concrete screw into the ground through the bottoms of them.
Yeah, if you plan on doing any screwing into the ground, you have to lay the boards flat.
Right. Yeah, and you can't, you know, I think it would be more difficult to do the bracing on the top, too.
It probably would be, but it's still doable, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to require more work to support it, but you do get some of your square footage back.
Right.
And for us, the ease of just having the thicker panels made sense.
Yeah.
So we've always done it that way, and it's the way we were taught when we first began. But then we go to these YouTube videos, and like Leonard Pickle, a guy that has been in the haunt industry for three decades, is one of the grandfathers of haunt design.
Yeah.
He uses the flat 2x4s to create the thin panels.
Right. And actually Chamber of Horrors, where we volunteered at, uses the flat ones also.
I think they learned it from Leonard, actually. So, yeah, you apparently... There's a cat in the room! Where did that come from? There's a cat in the room! Alrighty then. That's not. It's a black cat too, and it's totally crossed our path. This podcast is doomed. The point remains though that method is popular among haunts that are trying to save on the square footage.
Right.
And there are others that will use 2x2 backings and the safe space. It's a matter of what thickness you're comfortable with. And I personally think the trade off or a little extra thickness, even in our tight confines, is worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we would reclaim enough space.
Right, and it's also, to me, easier to make, you know, heavier drop panels.
No.
So.
Yeah. And then that's the other thing is, when you go to do drop panels and certain other scares, you're going to need that thickness, and it's helpful to have all of your walls the same thickness. Our drop panels are the same thickness as every other panel in this one. Our panels with windows are the same thickness.
Yeah.
Everything is the same thickness, universally, in our haunt.
Yeah.
So that's super helpful. Now, this begs a question, though. Why do haunters use panels?
Because it's easy to take apart and move around.
Yeah. One person who's reasonably strong can move a panel.
Yes.
They're easy to take down. And the main thing I find super useful about them is you can build them off-site.
Right.
You can build them in a workshop. You get a van somewhere and you truck them in. And then you just assemble the jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
So it is super, super easy to build these off-site, bring them out, and assemble them. And the other thing is, it makes, like I said, assembly and tear down and rearrangement super easy.
Right.
Because all you're doing is moving these set pieces as you need. Now, obviously, a haunt is more than just panels, but that's how most of the actual construction takes place usually, is they find these panels, they build them, and they assemble them to form something of a temporary structure.
Right.
And the other great thing about panels, though, while we're at it, is they are solid walls.
Yes.
You talked about not using tarp. Not only is it completely insane from a from a safety standpoint, a lot of fire codes will not even let you use soft walls.
Correct.
My understanding is you can't use soft walls most places.
Correct.
But I know you can get the fire retardant plastic, which I'm sure would mitigate some of that. But the other side of it is, people hit walls and haunts, they get scared. If you're scaring them properly.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just doing, you know, a spooky scene for smaller kids, it might be okay, but you're still going to run that cost every year up.
Yeah. And it's so hard to reuse cheap plastic. I mean, how much do you think we spend on a panel? I was trying to run the numbers. If it's a double-sided panel, we spend about $16 on the plywood, typically, plus a couple bucks for the 2x4. So we probably spend... There's a cat in the room again. we probably spend Approximately, I'm guessing about $20 to $25 in materials for the panel,
right?
Plus whatever we spend for paint and decoration.
Yeah. Yeah, I would put it at about 25, because most of your local hardware stores will have this magical thing called Oops Paint,
mm-hmm.
and it's paint that, you know, people got that they weren't happy with the color. It wasn't exactly what they wanted, or it looked different in the light than they got at home or whatever. So they bring it back, and it's drastically discounted.
It's like a couple bucks a gallon usually.
Yeah, I know at Home Depot it's $5. At Lowe's it's a percentage of the original price, and Walmart's the same way.
Yeah, the main thing, though, is you have to constantly be checking your local stores for this. Every time you go to Walmart, every time you go to Home Depot, throughout the year, look for paint that looks like it could be useful.
Yeah.
And pick it up. And that, to me, I found that to be the quickest and easiest and the cheapest way to assemble paint. But yeah, getting back to the panels, go ahead.
I was just going to make one mention real quick. The other thing to think about, other than paint, is that you can actually use colored light to color the rooms too.
Yes. Now, another divisive issue among haunters seems to be, when you're building your panels, do you nail it or screw it together?
I prefer to screw them.
I do too, because, yes, if you have a nail gun is quicker, but the ability to take apart the panels...
That's where my issue is, yeah.
Can be very, very useful. Like, for example, if we have an 8-foot panel, and for whatever reason, we need to cut it down to 6 feet.
Right.
Or we need to turn it into something else. We need to reuse the 2x4s. It doesn't have a place in the haunt. We need to reuse the requisite, the wood that makes it up.
Right.
The ability to unscrew it is very, very useful.
Yeah.
But that being said, I do understand that nailing it is silly quick. If you have a nail, it's dunk, dunk,
dunk, dunk. Yeah. It is. The other thing is, if you're using screws, a quick trick that I learned online was to use washers.
Yeah.
You know, so that way it's easier to take them out if you have to move stuff around.
Yeah.
And it saves your screws.
Yeah, it's actually very, very useful. We found it to be very useful to use washers in that environment.
Yes.
I just totally lost my train of thought on that one. I had something else to add.
Sorry.
But it's all right, no.
You were talking about nail guns or screwing.
Yeah. Most of the time, it's constructed just using good old-fashioned drywall screws.
Yeah.
3-inch screws for the lumber, and usually short 1.5-inch screws for the face.
Right.
It's pretty simple.
Drywall or wood.
And it's like I said, every haunt, though, does the lumber part differently. I've never been to two haunts that have done it the same.
No.
The core tenet is that backing needs to be strong.
Yeah.
And you need to put whatever wood works in your environment back there. So, I mean, experiment, learn, and once you find a pattern you like,
right.
One tip that I've seen repeatedly, we don't do it ourselves, but if you're building a lot of these, is to assemble a jig for yourself,
right.
So that you can quickly put the pieces together.
That makes a lot of sense. If you've got a place to store a jig for it, which is our problem.
Well, if you're like some of these haunts that are cranking out 200 damn things, a jig is like, duh.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people don't think of that, and a lot of home haunters especially, because, we assembled our panels. Cat in the room again. We assembled our panels a few at a time, basically, as we expanded. So we never did more than, like, 10 in a year.
Right.
But, it's one of those things where if you're going to be doing a very, very large number, a jig will save you a ton of time.
Yes. It wasn't going to be the panel show, but apparently it is.
we still got a lot of time. Don't worry about it.
Because the other thing that you can do with panels is, after you build your frame, you don't actually have to put a full skin of plywood on it.
No.
You can use pallet wood.
Yeah.
Which makes a really creepy effect.
Especially if you throw a light behind it.
Yeah, we like to light things from the backside. Yeah.
And you can also use it to make, like, you know, demolished house look.
Right.
Because essentially, if you think about it, if you remove the skins and you just had the frames of the panels up, it would look a lot like the structure of a house.
It would.
Just assembled in pieces and screwed together.
Yeah.
Weird. And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it is. And it's got the support beams and everything.
Yeah.
You know? And that's... I guess it's another reason that I like doing the panels the way we do them with them being wider.
Mm-hmm. Because the thicker panels, yeah.
Yeah, because if you make a demolished look, then it's going to look more realistic to a real build.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Okay, so let's talk about what you do with these panels in terms of construction.
Okay.
We'll talk. Well, you got something else about panels?
No, I was going to say, you put them up. That's what you do.
Okay, well, episode over. Go home, everybody.
Exactly.
I know. Well, actually, there are certain rules in how you set these up.
Oh, you want to talk about the rules.
The rules. This is fairly odd appearance. No, the first thing, if you're a professional haunt, the first rule you have is you have to have an egress corridor around your attraction.
Yes.
So you have a 4-foot walkway upon which, you know, there's nothing. It's an actor run / fire escape. That's it.
Right.
It's all that's allowed there. And
emergency exit.
Exactly. That's all it is. So this means none of your panels are going to touch the exterior wall, except maybe at the very front where people are coming in and out.
Right.
You got to watch out for that, because what you're doing is essentially building a structure within a structure.
Yes, you are.
And
it has to be freestanding.
It has to be freestanding because of that. You might, depending upon the nature of where you are, be able to affix to something in the ceiling, but I don't see how you're going to be able to do that and have a fire suppression system.
Yeah.
Which is kind of important.
It is. Fire suppression's very important.
Yes, and this is why your freestanding structure will not have a roof.
Yes, that's, you know, if you look at a lot of haunts, a lot of them use the mesh
kind of camo netting.
Right. You can build fire suppression systems into your roof, especially if you have a really tall ceiling.
Yeah.
Because then nobody's going to see it anyway.
But this is why if you are in a very, very nice, very professional hall, but you look up, you can sometimes still see the raw metal building and other stuff. I mean, play this game next time you're in a haunt. Look up.
I do that quite often. And, you know, and I don't know. It takes me out of it if, like, all of the haunt is completely done, including the ceiling, and then I get to a room that it isn't. It's just, whoop, I'm out of there.
And haunts are able to prevent people from doing that by using lighting tricks, and like I said, the camo netting can work, but you have to have an open roof to allow for the fire suppression system.
Right, and I realize that a lot of people aren't going to be looking up at your roof.
No. In fact, it's the magician's thing. You're trying to direct people's attention to anywhere. If there are people are looking up at the roof, they're bored slap silly anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the last time I did that was actually waiting in line to go into the House of Shock.
Actually, we did it at Linton Brewery in St. Louis because the roof was the cave.
Yeah,
that was actually kind of bitching.
The roof was the cave, and it was the only thing lit.
Yeah, well, that also helps. So, we could see the roof and nothing else.
Yes. Well, lighting it draws your attention to it.
Yes.
If you don't want to draw attention to something, don't light it.
Don't make it lit. Don't make it, and definitely don't make it the only lit thing in the room.
Yes.
Because I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to be looking straight at whatever the only lit thing in the room is.
Right.
So, you know, that obviously is true. So, yeah, basically, though, when you have your structure, you got a 4-foot walkway around it.
Right.
That cannot be impeded. And like I said, you might be able to have it connect at the very, very front where the entrance is. But beyond that, no.
Yeah.
It's your egress corridor, fire and safety rules. Obey it. Now, the obvious thing you do here is you take the panels, you put them up side by side, and you screw them together.
Yes.
The problem is, long runs of panels don't stay up.
Right.
Like I said, one of our panels, just stick it in a floor on a level surface, it'll stay.
Yeah.
But put two or three of them together, they won't.
Yeah.
So you have to make this a self-supporting structure.
Right.
And there's a ton of ways to do that. It depends upon, you know, what you are working with within the confines of your building.
Right. And it also is important for panel placement.
Mm-hmm.
And the lines of where people walk, the walking path through it.
Yeah, the walking path, which has to be 3 feet, 36 inches. I know it's the mantra of this show, it seems, but the 36-inch rule will be mentioned, I'm sure, for many, many, many more episodes on this show.
Yes, if you don't know it by now, you will soon.
You will know it very soon. It's 36-inch walkways, minimum.
Yes, if you have room to give a couple of extra inches, that's always a good idea.
But so the ways that it's typically done, though, in haunts is you assemble, like, an L piece to begin with, build out, and then you build supports across the various sections to hold it up. And what you get when you're all done is basically, you know, if you built, like, a square of panels and cross-supported from the top, it would stand.
Yes.
That's the idea.
Yes. I like to run it from corner to corner on the ones that end at the walkway. Mm-hmm. I will put a brace from the outside corner to an inside wall that is straight and supported in other ways. Mm-hmm. And that way it makes that impact wall or possible impact wall a little bit sturdier.
Yeah. But the idea is that you're going to build this. It's going to be freestanding. It will hold up on its own.
Right.
And theoretically, it'll be held together mostly by the sheer mass of what you have.
Yeah.
And that way, you can pretty trivially take it all down.
Yes.
There are some haunts, and we've done this, that will screw into the ground.
Yeah.
There are some places, like I said, where you can affix the ceiling. And you may be able to affix the outside walls using supports at the top. At like the 8-foot level,
right,
so not to impede the walking way. But yeah, basically speaking, you're going to shoot for something that's self-standing.
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah, we actually have an outside L that is both, that's the entrance to our garage haunt,
mm-hmm,
and it is freestanding. And it's also anchored to the inside haunt.
Yes.
And as well as concrete screwed into the ground outside. So
yeah,
we have like 3 levels of support pretty much throughout the haunt.
Yeah.
But that's probably the best example.
That's what we do. And, you know, like I said, every haunt builds it differently.
Yeah.
You typically, like I said, want to shoot for something that's just freestanding. So that way.
Yes. If you can't run into one of your walls and not have it fall over, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
That's the lesson.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
And I've been in haunts where that is true.
Yeah.
Where I mean, like, just going through the haunt, I leaned up against the wall or something to catch myself, or just because it's a tight corridor, and I'm pushing against the wall, and the wall moved, like, not the way it's supposed to. That's scary to me. Okay, That's frightening.
That's actual scary.
That's the wrong kind of scary. We're not shooting for that.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah, basically, you want to make sure that it's as sturdy as you can. And from there, you're going to build out hallways, you're going to build out rooms, and you're going to do it all using the panels. Now, the problem with using panels is that they have depth.
Right.
And depth creates problems. Because when you draw out, and this is dipping into the design, I guess we're going to have a little time for design discussion after all.
Yeah, we'll get a little bit into it at least.
Yeah, but when you're sketching out your design, whether it's on graph paper or whatever,
mm-hmm,
it looks so neat and perfect. Those 4x4 squares. Oh, I got 4-foot panels. And then you don't realize that those 2 inches, 3 inches, those 5 inches, whatever the thickness of your panel is going to completely screw it up.
Yeah.
And you've got to be prepared for what to do whenever things don't line up pretty, because, you know, the depth is unpredictable, it's variable, or, you know, because, like, when you abut 2 panels side by side to make, like, a long run,
right,
they don't necessarily fit perfectly flush.
Correct.
Now, I've seen videos, and I know haunters who use basically tongue and groove panels. They'll build their frame so the panels are interlocking. And that's great for straight runs, but it can create a problem when you're trying to do angles.
Right.
So you're making a bit of a trade-off there.
Yeah.
But, but basically it's not going to fit perfectly. Plus, you're going to have a tiny gap. But that tiny gap can, over the run of a haunt, add up to be, you know, a few inches.
Right. Yeah, it's like, you know, we've had to make some 2.5 and 3-foot panels two and a half foot wide, not tall.
That doesn't...
Yeah, but wide. To close gaps, to give us a tighter walking corridor, but we didn't have room in this small of a space to do two full panels next to each other.
And so the that other is problem one of run the... into is most structures that you're going to be putting a haunt in are not built for panels. I mean, like, for example, our garage is 25 by 25.
Yeah.
4 foot panels, do the math.
Yeah.
We got a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously not neatly divisible by four. And so even, you know, we could not necessarily make it. I mean, you have to do some wonkiness with some of the panels.
Right.
Now, when it comes to haunt design, and when you're putting these panels together, you have to think about, the first and foremost, the type of grid you're putting it on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I discussed, you know, the right angles and all that.
Right.
But that is probably, that's known as the square grid. It's probably your house and your office.
Right.
And every building you've ever been in is built upon.
Most of them.
It's a square grid. And it's because it's easy to build, it's reliable, and people are used to it.
Right.
But a lot of haunters have taken to using what's known as the triangle grid. We go back to Leonard Pickle on this one. He's the one that kind of developed and really has been pushing it for a long time now, for as long as I can remember.
Right.
I'm sure longer. In which you use a grid made of equilateral triangles, and it's equilateral. I looked it up. 4 foot on each side, and that way you can still have panels that connect side to side and make longer straight runs.
Right.
But when they come off of one another, they either come off at 60 or 120 degrees.
Hmm.
And the advantage there, if you're the customer, is that looks really, really weird.
Right.
And it's really unusual, because like I said, you've never been in a building like that.
Right. It's off-putting from the start just because of the design.
And it gives a lot of corners. It gives some very unusually shaped rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Everything looks very bizarre, angular and weird, and just it's hard to wrap your brain around. It also causes you to lose your sense of direction very quickly, because basically, when you're going through it, you're not making right-hand turns.
Right.
You're making slow turns at weird angles.
Right.
So, you know, you walk into a haunt, you can go north, south, east, west, and be thinking of it that way, and kind of have your bearings, where with this, you're going to lose all bearing.
Yeah.
Now, there are advantages and disadvantages to the system, and like I said, this is probably something that could get a whole topic, is grid and grid design.
Right.
But the main advantage of the triangle one is that it's easy to build a self-supporting structure, because of the angle and the way things are positioned, the haunt will stand up very easily.
Right, and doesn't it also use the space a little bit better?
It does make better use of space ever so slightly. It has less wasted space at the very least. But then again, a lot of what we call wasted space when we do our haunt design ends up being actor areas.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very, very efficient for smaller spaces. I would say anything, you know, but under 2,000 feet would see an obvious benefit from it. But the drawbacks are it's more difficult to build with, because you're not going to find 60-120 degree brackets super easy.
Right.
And it leaves gaps on one side, because the thickness of the walls means that there's no way for both sides to be perfectly contingent. It means one side, you have to cover up these gaps with props or curtains or...
Yeah,
something.
And that's one of my pet peeves, is having actor areas and doorways and walkways and haunts, you know, look the same.
Yeah.
Or actor areas be very, very visible.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just a pet peeve. It's annoying.
It's a pet peeve, and if you're really wanting for that perfect seal, that perfect look, a triangle-based grid is probably not for you.
Yeah, it's going to be more difficult to cover those. spaces.
And you're going to have a lot more. Like, every haunt's going to have gaps, no matter what grid they use.
Right.
If you're doing panel-based construction, something's not going to fit at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Thickness, irregularities, unlevel garage floor.
You just sound like you speak from experience,
I may be from this topic. Yeah. We'll cause gaps, and you're going to have to deal with them. But the fewer gaps I find for me, the better. But that being said, there is a lot of customer-facing benefit to
right.
a triangle-based layout.
There is. There's also, speaking of unlevel floors,
mm-hmm.
one of the things to be aware of, if you do have an unlevel floor, is the effect it will have on doors.
Oh, God.
You will have, because if you hang a door straight, it will not stay shut.
No. We have had to go back and intentionally hang some of our doors crooked for that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things we do, and it goes back to the panel element.
Right.
When we want to put a door somewhere,
yeah,
we build a panel.
Yeah.
We don't put the middle piece in, put the skin on, but then we hinge it.
Right.
It looks solid. It looks like every other panel.
Yeah. And that's actually our actor runs.
Yeah.
Our actor runs are full panel walls.
Yeah. And we use those all over this haunt.
Yeah.
I think we have way more doors than people realize.
Yeah.
We go a little crazy. But, yeah, that's a good point.
We have 7.
Doors?
We have 7 doors in a 600 square foot haunt.
If you're an actor, you can't get from one point of our haunt to another quickly. You're an idiot. Yes, we do, though. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're right. Holy cow.
I'm counting the little one outside.
Oh, yeah,
that's,
no.
That's kind of a door and kind of not. But
yeah, I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean. No, you're right.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I just realized how correct you are. Yeah, if you can't get from one point to
I forgot one.
Oh,
I forgot the one to the hole in the wall.
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
Both of those walls are doors.
They are.
One to storage and one to an actor's gear.
Yeah, we went a little hinge crazy.
Maybe.
We became unhinged.
Oh.
Ah.
That one hurt a little bit.
Dad joked ya.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. You know, that's another advantage of thicker panels, though.
Right.
It makes it easy to hide your doors.
Yeah.
So, another issue that comes up a lot when designing a haunt and when constructing it is, do you want to go with wall-based or prop-based layout, or do you want to combine them, and how do you want to combine them?
Right.
Now, the difference is, wall-based layout is when you're using the panels, the aforementioned panels,
right,
to carve the walking path,
yes,
almost exclusively. You're using it very, very directly and deliberately. And you have rooms, but the rooms tend to be smaller. They tend to be, you know what I mean? Not nearly as big. With prop-based layout, what you're doing is you're having bigger rooms, more open spaces.
Right.
But you're positioning props, whether they're tables or...
Pews in a church.
I've
seen that done a couple of times really well.
Yeah. Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll stop with the jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, pews in a church can work. You know, basically any prop that is big enough to be in people's way.
Yeah.
And coffins are commonly used.
Refrigerators.
Refrigerators are another common one. Operating tables.
Yeah.
Kitchen appliances. Whatever's in it. Cars.
Yeah.
A couple haunts have used
cars.
Basically anything that is not a wall to guide people and to extend the walk. Because the idea is this. You want almost every square foot of your haunt to be either walking path for the customers.
Right.
Actor area.
Right.
Or prop of some sort.
Yeah. And typically with the prop-based layouts, the props are not going to be as tall as your walls.
Mm-mm.
Typically.
No. You're going to use...
There are a few exceptions.
Like the like bookshelves and things like that.
Yeah.
But typically speaking, they usually hit right at 3 feet or so, 3 to 4 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want it high enough that people don't trip on it.
Right.
Obviously, don't be stupid.
But you also want them to be able to see where they're going. You know?
Yeah. And you want it to be instinctive for them to move through it. So you don't want them to have to be thinking about dodging everything.
Right.
And like if you're in the New Orleans area and you want to see a haunt that does great prop based layout, Rise has some very good prop-based layout rooms.
Right. And one of the things, you know, that's interesting with prop-based layout is if you've got something that's at about 4 feet, so that pretty much everybody can see over it.
There's someone there's a little person really pissed at you right now, by the way.
I'm sorry. Okay. I said pretty much. Yeah, most. Not all. Most. But
must be this tall to go through the haunt.
No. I'm not even saying you're getting into the okay. Anyway, so if you have something once you get about halfway in to the walkway, like and something comes up and it's really scary at the other side. Mm-hmm. You can see what you're going towards.
Yeah.
That takes the focus straight towards that.
Yeah.
And it will slow down people because that is technically a scare backward instead of a scare forward.
Yeah, it kind of is.
But it's a great effect.
Well, the thing about wall-based layout is that it's very unnatural feeling. Houses are not built that way. They're not built as a long corridor that you wind your way through.
Right.
They're built as a series of rooms.
Yeah.
So a prop-based layout where you're using beds and tables and stuff and whatever to navigate, because that's basically what you're trying to do, is you're trying to extend the walking path.
Right.
You go to some haunts, it's like you walk into a room, the exit door is right on the other side, you've got a room around you, and you don't set foot in like 80% of the room.
Right.
That means you're cutting through that haunt in about 1/5 the time. You could feasibly get almost five times more walking time through the haunt if they had altered the path.
Right.
And that's really frustrating to me when that happens, because I feel like I'm getting, you know, cheaped out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, houses, buildings are typically series of rooms. They're not a long winding corridor. That being said, wall-based layout is great for claustrophobia feeling.
Yeah.
And so what most haunts find themselves doing is a little bit of both. They'll have sections that are wall-based and they'll have sections that are prop-based. And it's important to know which section's going to be which early on. Mm-hmm. Where you're going to use the props and how you're going to use them.
Right.
And that's very important for when you're building and trying to design your rooms. And it all comes back around to, you know, planning and design.
Yes.
Which is, you know, one of the things I would say is the very first thing you should do, A, measure your space.
Yes.
We forgot to our first year. We might have forgotten to. Measure your space and then get a nice little sheet of graph paper.
Yeah.
And map it out. Now, that's whether you're using triangle grid or square grid. You can actually download triangle graph paper off the interwebs.
Yeah. We should touch a little bit on CAD programs.
Yes, and that was the next step, is you want to take this into some kind of software.
Right.
And I've got to say,
just to make sure that everything fits before you put up the first panel.
The main thing I would say, and bear in mind, you can do the best CAD in the world.
Right.
I know, I've done it. And then when you go and you assemble it, something gets squirrely.
Yeah.
I remember one time building it, laid it out in CAD, had this garage nailed down, every stud, everything.
Yeah.
I've still got it somewhere. I've got to find it. But, and I'm like, and then I did a design in it. I had everything line up with the stud, because since we don't need egress corridors, we just put directly into the studs.
Right.
Basically, I had it all mapped out, and then we cut the walls in. And sure enough, by like the third wall, I realized I was nowhere near a stud.
Yeah.
My whole theory, everything went right out the window on day one of build. So it can happen even with CAD. But yes, and to me, the app to use, especially if you're not good with, if you like know AutoCAD and stuff, Godspeed, you're done.
Yeah.
This part of the podcast can be ignored.
Yes.
But if you're a human being, like, CAD people aren't human beings. I have no idea why I said that. CAD people are perfectly loyal.
I don't know. You're hitting all the right buttons tonight.
the lynch mob out front is always ready for us.
Oh, they're just looking for the monster.
But, you know, the CAD program, if you're new to it, is Google. It's not Google SketchUp anymore. It's just called SketchUp.
Yeah.
It's free. There's a free version.
Free is nice.
Free is good. That's a good start. But most importantly, it is a very simple program to pick up and to learn. You can learn the basics of CAD in that program probably in a few hours.
Yeah.
And considering that...
It doesn't take long at all.
Yeah, and considering this is like a skill that people go to college for years for.
Yeah.
And you're going to be picking up enough to design a haunt in probably a few hours.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and it does have 3D elements in it. So
it's a 2D and 3D program.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's silly simple to learn. And you know, the first thing you do when you're designing a haunt is after you've built your external structure, is you're going to build a panel in SketchUp, and then you're going to copy and paste that flipping panel hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it goes. But yeah, I find that it's really, really helpful to do a CAD, not just to test and to make sure you're not on crack.
Yeah.
But also to convey your idea to others.
Right.
A 3D CAD, you know, a 3D computer draft of it is a beautiful thing when you're trying to show actors.
Yeah.
When you're trying to show people helping you build what you're doing and what the end goal is.
And also whenever you have to put together your fire plan for professional haunts, you want that drawing. You want to show that everything's going to be... You know, you're going to have your walkways, you're going to have your egress corridor.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, nice and professional. And
You need that. And it is, like I said, it's well worth the time and investment. Because here's the thing. Even if you spend 6 hours learning SketchUp, and once you've learned it, you'll never need to learn it again. You're done. It'll probably save you more than 6 hours of construction that year.
Yeah.
Easy.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
So, the time you take learning it, you will get back in spades.
Yeah.
You'll get it back almost immediately, I'm pretty sure. Because when we started doing CAD for our haunt, it helped immensely with our redesign center.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I screwed it up 1 year...
That's okay. It was the first time.
It was the first time. And we've learned, and, you know, and that's one of the things, is you have to realize when you're doing CAD, the same as with graph paper or anything else, you're not building... the exact model. It's the idea, it's the concept, and it's a reality and a sanity check.
Right.
But it's not necessarily going to be exactly how it comes out. Because stuff happens.
Yep.
Just how it is, man. But yeah. So for me personally, though, getting back to the wall base versus prop base, like I said, most haunts will use a combination too, but I love a good prop base layout.
Yeah,
I get really excited going into a haunt, seeing a big, expansive room with lots of stuff to look at and walk around.
Yeah.
It's a really cool feeling. And
yeah, especially for us, because we look at all the little details.
Yeah.
And the more details you give us to look at, the less we're going to be looking for the scares.
Yeah. And that brings us neatly, we've got about 15 minutes left,
all right,
to scare placement.
Alrighty.
What's
and this role? Is really, really, you know.
This is super brief.
Yes.
Everything's been super brief.
Yes.
So, yeah, we were able to make it both about the construction and design.
Yeah, but we'll be having, one on this.
We did it purely by omitting, like, 90% of the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We're blowing through it like a tornado through Kansas right now, admittedly. But, and now anyway. Kansas natives are out in front.
I know. How many more people can you piss off?
I don't know. I've got about 13 minutes. Give me time.
All right. Anyway.
Rule number one of scare placement is?
Scare forward.
God damn right it is.
You don't want anybody running back because they could run over your other guest.
Well, not only that, but then they never leave.
That's true, too.
Scare forward now, is essential for everything from safety to throughput. It's
right.
It is the magic mantra of scare placement.
Yeah.
You can scare sideways sometimes, but never, ever, ever. Actually, the rule should be more defined as never scare back.
Yeah. There is one advantage to scaring right in front of somebody.
Yeah.
And that is that it makes them stop in their tracks.
Yeah.
If you have a problem with people going through your haunt too fast, a well-placed scare right in front of them can stop them for a few seconds.
Well, and even when you do scare back a little bit. The important thing is that the exit path be in a different direction, basically.
Right.
You can scare someone face to face as long as they're going hooking a left or a right.
Right.
You know, and that's something I've seen done a fair amount in haunts with some success.
Right.
But the main thing is you don't want to cause a collision between one group and the group coming in behind them.
Right.
And that's what happened. And I've actually been in haunts where this happened to me, where I was in the group they got collided with.
Yeah.
Because something, usually an actor. Actor went a little rogue, scared back.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of it was...
Sorry. Cat was in the room again, distracting Jonathan.
Sorry. And the result of it, though, is a bad experience for just about everyone involved.
Yeah.
So, and haunts live and die by their throughput. They live and die by their safety records. Scaring backwards hurts both of those things in a bad, bad way.
Yep.
So, scare forward, or at the very, very least, scare sideways.
Yeah.
I find it is especially useful to place scares around corners. And this is a general rule I found. And one of the reasons that triangle-based layout is potentially so great is because it's nothing but corners.
Yeah.
It's corner after corner after corner. And the reason you put scares after corners is because if you have a line of people going through, the back of the line can't see the scare.
Correct.
And that way, a line of people can be four, you know?
Yeah.
A line of people can be four if they're spaced out wrong. If they're all huddled together in a terrified mass
going
of humanity.
Around in a circle and hitting all the walls.
Seen it? Yeah. If they're that, then no, they're not a line. But if four people are going orderly through a haunt, they are a line.
That almost never happens.
Yeah. Fair enough. But the point of the matter is you want to put it around a corner so that way the people at the back of the line don't see the scare. They just see people getting scared and don't know what the hell happened. And that keeps it a little fresh.
Right.
Overall, the idea is that you want to build the haunt in such a way that the people in the front of the line and the back of the line get as close to the same experience as you can. If you're going to have to do a scare, if you're going to have to do a scare on a hallway, try to make sure that you have everyone in that hallway before you hit the scare.
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, you tell actors, time to the middle of the group.
Yep. That is correct.
You want to make sure everyone gets it. So if you have like a drop panel in a hallway, which is a fine idea, you tell them, okay, we have groups of four coming in. As person two tiptoes past, that's when you hit. You hit between two and three.
Yeah.
And that maximizes it for everyone. So, yeah. Also... use lots of pretty props as distractions.
Yeah, well...
we're going to do the whole distract and startle one. We've already planned that one.
We've even got a special guest for that one.
I'm excited about that one.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go too detailed on it.
No, and, you know, I find that not only is it important to have a pretty prop, but it's important to have... the lighting is such a big deal.
Yeah.
Such a huge deal.
I'm looking forward to the lighting episode because that's something you're silly-ass passionate about.
I know.
No. That passion's good.
Yeah.
This is Haunt Weekly. We are idiots doing a podcast about haunted attractions.
Every week.
Passion, we would be nowhere with this.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah.
This is very true.
So, yeah. But, yeah. I mean...
Because, I mean, you can have the prettiest thing in the world.
People can't see it.
If you can't see it, it doesn't matter. You know, I have no idea what
the Limp Brewery was
because, you know, they could have had great props. The ones that were lit were great, but
and they seem to have some things in the shadows that look pretty cool, but
I couldn't tell.
No, so yeah, lighting is crucial, but yeah, the idea is simple. You give the tools to your actors so that they can take advantage of a distracted and unprepared audience,
right?
And that's tough, because when people go into a haunt, they're kind of automatically prepared.
Yeah.
And you're trying to break down that sense of preparedness by guiding where they look, by giving them a false sense of security, by generally trying to get them to look at and think about anything other than the person about to jump out at them with a weapon.
Right.
That's the goal. think about anything else in the world other than that.
Yeah.
That's the secret. Well, this has been a very whirlwind tour through two very, very detailed topics. And I mean, I think maybe we should do an entire episode on panels.
Yeah, maybe. Let us know. Would you like to hear that? Or did we talk about them enough and bore you out of your mind?
Are you already bored of panels? You want to go on to something? Where are you going to talk about scaring people? Where's the dog? I can hear it now.
It's coming.
It's coming, we promise. And we have actually got, like I said, we've lined up a guest or two that's going to help us explain some of this stuff to you.
Right.
And so I'm really, really stoked about these conversations.
Yeah. One quick note. Mm-hmm. We have to mention that you...
Oh, that's right. How dare I forget.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, jeez, I forgot.
If you want to meet Jonathan, at least, I'm trying to get off of work so that I can go too. But Jonathan will be speaking this year at HauntCon.
Yeah, I'll be there in capacity of my day job.
Yes.
As a copyright and plagiarism consultant, I'll be talking about copyright and trademark in the haunt industry. I expect it to be a thoroughly dull
he's a very entertaining speaker.
I've already decided my opening line is going to be, you know what scares haunters? Lawsuits.
Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about getting sued.
Yep.
So, yeah. But yes, copyright and trademark in the haunt industry. But HauntCon, that is January 28th through February 1st at the Sheraton Birmingham.
Yes.
You can get all of your tickets and info, including if I just screwed up the hotel. But it's in Birmingham, Alabama. I may have just screwed that up. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't have the information on me. I totally forgot. I blanked on it because it was all so recent.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, but I just got the confirmation on this.
And that's HauntCon.com for those of you who don't know about it.
Check it out. It's a really, really cool convention. We went last year. It was in Baton Rouge. We had a great time. Met lots of awesome people. And I am looking forward to getting in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
Should be.
All right. Well, anything else, Crystal?
That's it.
Well, on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 3, talking about basic haunt construction and basic haunt design.